Hey gang, are you in a band in Austin? You're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery, lit corridors, plenty of parking, and excellent PAs. That's what they have to offer. Call them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and take the talent train from Schmoesville to Protown with Space, rehearsal and recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a good weekend of packing, a lot of packing, getting ready for my big show. Hey, gang, if you're listening to this the day that it comes out, this is Tuesday, April 30th. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 1st, weather permitting, I will be playing with my band at the Sun Radio Show at Wero's. Come on out. It's going to be a great show. We play 7 to 8. If you go to those shows normally, they have music from 6 to 8. It's a live radio show on Sun Radio, 100.1 FM here in Austin. Check it out. I'll be playing with the great Einar Peterson, Gabriel Rhodes, Eric Garcia, and on backing vocals, I will have MC Glazer from Shy Beast and also my old friend, Jane Ellen Bryant. So it's going to be a great show. Great times. It's a great place under the oaks out there. You can get a drink, you can get a taco, you can get chips, do what you want, chill out, enjoy the evening with Johnny Gowdy and his crazy friends. All right? Live on Sun Radio. If you're in your car and you're not able to make it to the show or you're by a radio at that point, you can listen to us live tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 1st, 7 to 8 p.m. on Sun Radio, live at Wero's. All right. Hey, guys, welcome to episode 798. This is a highlight show, a best of the last 97 episodes. People I've talked to, I take little excerpts from the conversation. I put them in. I scatter them throughout the show so you can kind of get to know what the show's about. If this is the first time you're coming to the show, you'll get a little taste of what it's about. These conversations are long. And I'll tell you what, it's a bit of work to find these things, you know, like you got to find the thing in the conversation. Remember this one? Oh yeah, this one was good. And I try to do it throughout the year, but I don't. I lose track and I forget and I don't write down times or anything, but maybe this year I will. Anyway, this is a great show, chock full of fantastic conversations with all kinds of great artists that I've had over the last year on How Did I Get Here. Up first, my friend Darden Smith, he put out a book this year that was incredibly inspiring to me, and everyone, I think, should read it. Anyone, even if you're not in music, it was one of the most inspiring books I've ever read. It's a very, it's a memoir, but it's not really written like a memoir. It's called The Habit of Noticing, Using Creativity to Make a Life and a Living. It was released in September. I got the audiobook, and it was really great. It was like having Darden tell you his story. It's available on all mediums. A beautiful book, The Habit of Noticing. Check it out. Darden Smith. This is me and Darden talking. He's telling me about how we need to be inspired, and sometimes we need something. I was telling him how the book affected me and how I felt like I needed it. When I read it, I was like, I didn't realize I needed to read this right now. And he was like, this is something that's great about being part of a community because you get it there. And then he tells us how he got the gig opening for Stevie Nicks. This is Darden Smith. From episode 779. Let's get down. They came out. I mean, it's definitely worth it. It's a great experience having you tell your story.
Yeah. So, but I think we all need, at different parts of different times of our life, we all need somebody to wake us up.
Yeah.
You know, in different ways, you know, and I've got my people that I go to, you know, and I just feel like they know something I don't know, and like, you know, and we all have that. We all need that. Yeah.
That's definitely a
glad
theme.
Glad I could be that
throughout
for,
the book
for a
you,
minute.
Yeah, yeah. Throughout the book, you run into people that tell you what you need to know at certain times, and sometimes it is Russ Kunkel and Tony Bennett, and then sometimes it's your coffee roaster friend.
Exactly. who I just dropped a book off for.
Did you?
Yeah, but you know, the great thing is that we all do that for people.
Yeah.
And we all are putting out a message at all time when we go out into the world. We're always, you know, it's how do you open the door? Do you or do you not open the door for somebody?
Right.
Do you or do you not help someone with their luggage on the plane? Do you or do you not speak kindly to a kid who may be needing it and you don't even know?
Right.
And so I think most of the important messages that we get and we give in our lifetime, the person giving the information often doesn't know that they're giving you the secret information.
Right.
They're just being themselves. Yeah. Like Russ didn't know that he changed. He doesn't even, talk to him. So Russ, you know, he tells me this story about going on an adventure, and I sent him a copy of the book, and he goes, "Darden, I have no recollection of this. Are you sure this happened?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, it happened. You changed my life, dude." And that's almost better than someone sitting down and giving you a lecture. Yeah. I think it's way better.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
Yeah. Can I ask you a quick aside question?
Yeah.
What was it like opening for Stevie Nicks?
Stevie Nicks, that was a trip, man.
what year was that?
It would have been 93 or 4. 94.
Okay.
It was a record. It was based on it was after a record of mine called Little Victories.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had the same agent. That's how I got the gig.
Okay.
And they sent her a list of a bunch of potential opening acts. And she had heard one of my songs on the radio and had her assistant go out and buy the CD like a month before this. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so she's sitting around with her friends drinking wine, looking at this list of potential opening acts. And they just happened to recognize my name. And she said, "Oh, get him." It had nothing to do with any career move at all. They paid me extremely well. And the cool thing was, of course, I was nervous as, you know, Stevie Nicks, man.
And you were playing places like Irwin Center-sized places, right?
Yeah, they were mostly outdoor venues. And okay. So we were playing outdoor sheds. I mean, it was like 10,000 people a night. And I was solo.
Oh,
super freaky and super cool, you know? And after three gigs, well, after the first gig, or second gig, second or third gig, Stevie and Russ Conkle are standing at the monitor board watching me perform, which is like, it's Russ Conkle.
Yeah.
It's like,
I know.
It's like Russ Conkle. He's like played on all those amazing, I mean, I remember being in high school staring at album covers, and there he is, you know?
Yeah.
And after the gig, between my show and their set, Russ and Stevie came to my dressing room, and I was, you know, there's this knock on the door, and in they walk, and my thought was, okay, that's it. I'm done. I'm just like, that's it.
They hope you had a good time.
Yeah. I'm getting fired.
Yeah.
And Stevie goes, "Hey, we've watched you tonight." I went, "Yeah, I know. I saw you over there. You're Stevie Nicks." And she said, "Yeah, we were wondering, you play guitar just like the guitar that we need. And would you play on Dreams with us?"
Oh, God. Are you kidding me?
And Russ goes, "Yeah." He goes, "We've got two lead guitar players, and neither one of them will play rhythm." And I was like, "You're asking me to play on Dreams?" "Yeah." And I picked up my guitar and just started strumming. And Russ goes, "Exactly. That's it." Well, that's the kind of guitar that I grew up listening to that music, you know, that boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And so by the end of the, you know, I learned it, and, you know, I think I did two songs, you know, and then at the end of the first night, Russ came, and, you know, we're talking, and I said, "You know, listen, I'm going to be here for the rest of the tour, I think, and I ride with you. I'm on the bus with you guys. So if you need any other rhythm guitar, I'm here."
Yeah.
You know, I'm free. I'm free.
Yeah.
And I'm here, you know? And so by the end of the set, I was doing half the set.
That's which awesome.
Was awesome. And it's the only band I've ever been in. That was somebody else's band. It's the only one. It was, and I learned so much. Like,
that is Darden Smith from episode 779. What a great conversation. And also really check out his book, The Habit of Noticing. I cannot recommend it enough. It is inspiring. Hey, gang, speaking of inspiring, I forgot to mention the intro of this show. Episode 800, man. Coming up this Sunday, May 5th. At Cosmic Coffee, from 5 to 7, my guests will be Alicia Lani, Ray Prim, AC Minaro from Go Fever. Yeah. Lori Gallardo from KUTX. Yeah, come on out. 5 to 7, free thing this Sunday. Come celebrate with us. 800 episodes. I can't believe I've gone this far. Gang, I get something out of talking to everyone on these shows, and sometimes I learn something about how to deal with other friends that have certain situations. One of those things is depression. Like, I get depressed, but I don't suffer from depression. I can snap out of it. Some people cannot snap out of it because it's a clinical sort of depression, and it can be very intense. So when episode 759 came around, and I was talking to Jamie Harris, my dear friend, who finally released her album Red Rescue, and it's available everywhere now, wherever you find albums. Jamie and I asked her about her depression. She was talking about being on tour and getting depressed and not knowing if she was going to be able to do the show. But I talked to her about it, and I think it helps me deal with other people, families that suffer from depression, other friends, even Jamie. I know what Jamie's kind of going through because she explained it to me. So this is one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite artists. We write songs together. She sings with me sometimes. We hang out together. I love Jamie Harris very, very much. And this is her talking about depression.
I don't know. I don't know what I do.
How do you handle depression? Because you suffer from
not
it, right?
Not very well. Not very well. I mean, I've never been medicated for it. I'm like afraid of it. But
afraid of medication?
I am. I'm afraid of it. I mean, I see it. I know people where it's really, really helped them,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah, me too.
And completely changed their lives. But I think I just have probably like an unrealistic fear of taking medication. But you know what? It's probably, I know, I mean, I'm not in therapy right now, and
you're
that's
not.
Coming. No, I got to get into some therapy. And
well, let me ask you this. You've been on nonstop tour. And
right.
I find that I am always one step ahead of depression if I'm one step behind in my work trying to catch up, and I'm so busy that I don't really even have time to acknowledge the fact that I am depressed. I mean, a lot of people do. I mean, it's called workaholic. You're
right.
Running from a thing.
Yeah, yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. Well, I mean,
when you're doing that, when you're out on the road, like how, I mean...
Well, you
you're
know,
doing what you love every single night.
Exactly. And it's been great. But I did have this experience where in the Netherlands, I got hit with just a mini episode, like 4 days of it. And
what happens when that happens?
What I want to do is to hide away from everything because I have this feeling like nothing I'm doing is right. I have a hard time speaking in complete sentences. Everything is magnified. And I have a hard time discerning reality. Like when I sing in that song, like, you know, and not someone that everyone hates, when I'm in that vibe, I just feel like
I just
feel like being around me is worse. And sometimes this feeling that maybe going out and like seeing my friends or maybe playing or something will help. But sometimes I just have this like, I don't know. I really struggled in the Netherlands because out there, you know, I've been singing with Mary, which has been wonderful. And I'm opening the shows solo. And with a band, if I'm playing a show, having to work like that when I'm depressed, we can kind of go song to song and I can limit the time I have to talk in between songs, or I can kind of put glasses on and not make direct eye contact with people and sing through it and push through it. But with an acoustic show, I feel like the story, especially for a folk singer, like the stories are important and connecting with the audience each night is really important. And if I'm having trouble speaking in complete sentences, or if I feel like I'm not doing my best and I feel like they feel it, it can kind of send me into a, dark. it can throw me
spiral,
off.
Spiral
and I felt
down.
Like I just had three or four shows where I just couldn't click into it, which then made it worse. And then I'm like questioning everything. Like, what am I doing? Like, am I supposed to be doing this? Should I just be a background singer? Like all the things that are kind that I think about kind of anyways, like, am I doing this correctly? Or what can I do to improve my show? Or all the doubts I think that we already have as artists get magnified.
Yeah.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, totally does. Yeah. Totally does. So how did you get out of it then? Like in the Netherlands, what, you just woke up one day and you felt better?
Yeah, it's like I had this moment where I broke and I just cried for like hours and hours and hours and all through the
night. Fever breaking or something.
Isn't it weird? Yeah. And I just feel like I let it out and then it got better. Like the next day was a little bit better, and then the next day, and then I finally felt myself like returning.
Yeah. From episode 759, that's my dear friend Jamie Harris talking about depression. And it's intense, right? What a great artist, Jamie Harris. Not to get off the subject, but to get off the subject, man. Let me tell you, her record Red Rescue is absolutely fantastic. It's out there. She's out there touring with Mary Gaucher. She's going to Europe again. She's doing shows here. Look her up, jamieharris.com. Amazing artist. I'll be playing her song, Depressive State. on the next episode 779. Jamie Harris, check her out, amazing artist. Another great conversation I had this year is with musician/actor Ben Dickey from the movie Blaze. You might know him. His newest album, A Glimmer on the Outskirts, is available now on Sex Hawk Black Records, a label owned by Ethan Hawk, Charlie Sexton, and Lewis Black. They put that label together, put out Ben Dickey's album, A Glimmer on the Outskirts. It's absolutely fantastic. I got the good fortune to head down to the Sex Hawk Black headquarters, and I went down into their screening room with Ben Dickey, and we sat down, and he told me how he got the gig doing Blaze. This is me and the great Ben Dickey talking about Blaze. Let's get down.
Yes, looks that way.
Did you ever... was this ever like there's a quote from you that says you might not get what you go after, but you do get what you wouldn't have got if you hadn't gone after what you didn't get.
Well, see, that's Blaze. When we did the Sundance Awards, I said that at the end of the speech. I was so flabbergasted when I went to that. I didn't know there was an award ceremony, first of all. I thought it was just like an artist symposium where you met the other people and like ate snacks. But I had to pee really bad when that happened, and I had, you know, you don't always get what you go after, but you do get what you wouldn't have got if you hadn't got after what you didn't get. And I loved that, and that was something I always heard him say, and that's true, you know. So I put that in there just because that applied for me in the moment. I didn't have any aims on acting whatsoever. Ethan and I are really good friends, and starting like about 10 years ago, he just started showing me scripts, and like he wanted me to read them. He wanted me to be familiar with the prep, you know, because I was a chef,
yeah, yeah,
and a musician, and like preparation, and I was an athlete, and like preparation is like I'm obsessed with. When we go on a road trip, I'm prep, get ready, make things situated.
Right.
So he was always wanting me to look at it, and I was always, I'm interested in that facet of just looking at it, but. He took me to a couple table reads where he wanted me to read for a character, and I did a couple with him. But he was really wanting me to, he was like, I think you'll love it. I think you'll really be good at it. And I think like your mind is already geared toward it. And I was always like, yeah, I appreciate it, you know, but I was trying to run a rock and roll band, and I was a chef. I kind of happened into that world and like that culture, like just, I functioned good in that culture, food culture and kitchen culture, and I'm tall and I'm a good leader, I guess. I just, all of a sudden, I'm a chef, right? But he put Beth, my sweetheart, and I in a movie that he made as the kissing couple. And he really wanted us in there for the purposes of his protagonist to see a couple that, like, you know, that's how lovers behave.
Right.
And he also wanted me to be on set to, like, what do you think? You know?
Experience it.
Yeah, and I love him a lot, and I knew he was encouraging me, but I just didn't see it. I didn't have a desire to do it whatsoever. And when the Blaze thing came up, it was tied to music, and it was tied to a responsibility I felt, because I knew that if Ethan was going to make a film about Blaze Foley, he would take great care.
Right.
And then he was at, because I love Blaze and I hate biopics. I tend to, yeah. You know? And I was like, well, I bet you'll do it cool. And he was like, I'm not going to make it if you don't do it. And all right, you know, it was an opportunity to make this piece of art with one of my best friends and get to work with him. And he's really good at what he does. And I love working on, I love having missions, you know, like this yeah. is the mission. And I got to play music. So I knew that if I was terrible at one part of the deal,
right.
I was going to take care of the songs and people would be like, well, he sings the songs really well. He's a terrible actor, you know? So that was like a safety net, you know, it's like, you know, and I knew that if I was terrible, he would turn it into a very arty film. And yeah. he didn't want to hurt me. And he, him believing in me was a big deal. I mean, it was like, all right. I'll do it.
Right. Ben Dickey from episode 780, talking about getting the part for Blaze and being in the movie Blaze. What a great, great dude, man. That was such a great conversation. Go back and listen to that, man. It's great. And that movie, if you haven't seen it, directed by Ethan Hawke, such a great, great movie. Get out there and check it out. All right. So back in December, I had the pleasure of getting to go to the Native Hostel and getting to do a panel at the On the Record in Austin, Texas, an ATX Music Marketplace and panel. It was sponsored by South by Southwest and Austin Music Foundation and Native Hostel. I got to talk to Chris Frenchie Smith. I got to talk to Lewis Black, who is one of the owners of Sex Hawk Black Records, who put out Ben Dickey's album. And also I got to talk to rock legend and my dear friend, Kathy Valentine from the Go-Go's. And we were talking about how Beauty and the Beat was number one for 6 weeks. So I asked her what those 6 weeks were like. So from episode 770... On the Record, an ATX Marketplace, live in front of an audience at Native Hostel. This is me talking to Kathy Valentine. Let's get down. So today, even though you and I are good friends, I was doing some research on you and your career. And I noticed that the Go-Go's Beauty and the Beat was the first record by an all-female band that was a number one record, and it was a number one record for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What was those 6 weeks like? Do you remember those 6 weeks?
Yeah, I remember it really well. And you didn't know that until just this recent research?
I mean, I'm sure I knew it, but it wasn't like, I don't think that whenever we're hanging out.
It's a really cool claim to fame, because not only were we the first all-female band to have a number one record, we are still the first all-female band. So yeah. We kind of thought since 1981 that maybe, you know, things might have changed a little. But for whatever reason, we still hold that title. But it was super exciting. It was a lot of work. I mean, having just written my memoir, why am I feeding back? Am I doing it wrong?
Okay.
Having just done my memoir, it's all really fresh in my mind, and it was really exciting. I remember the moment that we went number one, and it was a lot of extremes, a lot of hard work. It took 9 months to push the record to number one. We faced tons of resistance. The record company was a small label, so not only were we the first female band to do that, but we were also one of the first indie record labels that got to number one. Right. And it really helped, you know, bands like REM and people that followed in our path. So that was exciting, but there was just so much resistance from radio people. Radio people, I mean, they would all have us come in and interview us and stuff. I think it was more like curiosity and wanting to hang out and, like, look at us and see what we were like. But we did all that work. We would go to the radio stations and shake their hands and do their interviews at 6 in the morning. And all that work finally paid off. But what really paid off for us was MTV.
Right.
Yeah, MTV was starting right when we were, and being put into people's living rooms, I think, and in a very non-slick kind of, like, we just stood out.
Yeah.
We stood out.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the Our Lips Are Sealed video and wanting to ride around in the car with you guys and jump in the fountain.
Yeah, we were so annoyed doing that video. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's just like everybody's making these slick videos because it's all new, and they've, you know, Madonna's like breaking out with videos. Even though she's not a huge star yet, she's still making really slick videos, and ours always look like home movies, you know. I'm like, God, we can't compete. But yeah, that was annoying that whole day.
What about the fake water skiing and vacation?
Yeah.
Was that weird?
We were bombed. We were bombed. Yeah. But it was fun because I kept thinking about like the Elvis Presley movies, you know, where like they have the projected projected waves behind you. That's how it was done, you know.
The great Kathy Valentine from the Go-Go's and the Blue Bonnets and our band, Lady Band Johnson. That's right. That was recorded live at Native Hostel at the Omni Record Marketplace. Very, very great conversation that day. I also had great conversations with Chris Frenchie Smith and Lewis Black. Go on back and listen to it, episode 770. Great times. Love talking to Kathy. Check her out. Looking forward to that memoir as well. All right, on to my next conversation. Jackie Venson has had a big year, gang. A big couple of years, actually, but the last year has been very big. She's gone to Europe a number of times. She's played Austin City Limits Music Festival. She did this huge record release just a few weeks ago at the Paramount Theater here in Austin. That's a huge bite to take off. I can't wait to talk to her again to find out all about it. I haven't talked to her since the record release, but before the record release and the release of her brand new album, Joy, she came over and talked to me in the apartment. We had a great conversation. We did. We've actually talked a couple. I talked to her at a live event out at Austin City Limits Music Festival right after she played last year. But this was the apartment a little bit earlier this year. This is from episode 790. This is Jackie Venson telling me how much it takes practice-wise to be Jackie Venson. Okay, so you...
There you go.
You've had a prolific year.
Oh, man. I have one gray hair.
Output.
My first gray hair came this year.
How does your writing look? Are you a daily writer? Are you a get up and write every day person?
No. I don't have any kind of schedule. The only schedule is that I have to be in the rehearsal space holding a guitar doing something for at least 5 hours a day.
Wow.
So whatever comes out of that is fine. Sometimes it's me sitting on the ground, like just messing around. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's me writing a song because I have a song that I have to write. It's like, okay, I have to get this single out by this month. So I have to write a song right now because I need to record it in this month just to have it out by that month. So sometimes I go in with a mission. Sometimes I just go in like, you know what? I haven't practiced a scale in like a week, you know? Because like just because I'm rehearsing every day doesn't mean I'm practicing some specific thing every day. You know, like I can do 3 or 4 days in a row, 5 hours a day in the rehearsal space, and I was writing or I was preparing my sampler for the show, or I was, you know, there's all this other stuff I can do. I was practicing the acoustic guitar, not the electric. You know, like there's all this stuff that always has to be done. So that's why I have to just be in the room for like 5 hours a day. Just so I can just, oh yeah, I forgot to dial.
Even Sundays?
I usually try and take Sundays off.
Okay. But I literally only take six days a week. So basically like 30 hours a week.
At least.
Dedicated to just... Alone, playing.
Yeah, just like
it's not band practice, not gig. Just like I'm playing.
Band practice is separate.
Yeah,
actually, I hardly ever practice with the band. I only practice alone because the players are so good, and I make sure of it. The players are so good that as long as I know what to do, they'll just follow me.
How do you translate some of this more electronic stuff that you do that you did on these recordings?
I use a sampler.
So you still,
I have a new piece of equipment, so okay. I don't loop anymore.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I used to loop forever. It doesn't serve me anymore. The songs are too complicated because like you can only loop if the song is not moving.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
If it's the same beat with the same
chord progression. As soon as you have to, or the same beat and you play the chord progression over that beat.
Right.
And so therefore you can be flexible with the chord progression.
So
but
now
still
they're actually
the
arrangements. The electronic bass is there and it changes.
Yes, it does change. Ooh, because
that's a little scarier.
What had happened was I found this, I used to plug a drum machine. You were actually there. It was at the next, the first ADP graduation concert.
Right. Okay.
I had a drum machine on a stand with a cup with bright orange sticks in it.
Yes, you did.
You remember that?
Yeah, you did.
That was 2 weeks after I bought that drum machine. So that was you saw the very beginning of my new life with drum machines. Like ever since I picked up a drum machine and figured out, like plugged into Loopetter, figured out I could use it. I've been writing with the drum machine. It's just totally a part of my sound now. It completely changed everything. But what I realize is that also my songs are, I don't want to have them be stagnant the way they need to be for looping. The most you can do with looping is stack. So what you do is you have the same beat and you have the same chord progression the whole song.
It doesn't change.
It doesn't ever change. So what do? Oh, well, for this part, I'll stack on top a little guitar part. And then in 2 minutes, when people get bored of that, I'm going to start going, ooh, ooh. And all you can do is stack.
You can, for those that are listening that aren't musical... There are a lot of hit songs out there that you can tell are written on a loop, like
like all rap music.
Exactly, but
yeah, yeah.
What all about that bass? I know that's an old reference, but that song, like the first time I heard it, I was like,
somebody wrote this on a looper pedal.
Somebody gave this person these chords.
But even with that song, if you try to play it without a band and only with the looper pedal and try to make it, it's like it's this nuance to where if you play the chords at a certain velocity and loop that at the certain velocity, guess what? That's the only dynamic of
the
whole
song. Yeah.
Like there's not a human playing. Like the way you just played it, just even kind of half-assed.
Yeah.
You were still like putting dynamics into it.
Right.
Imagine if that never changed.
No.
So like literally the only thing you can do is stack. That's the only way you can change the dynamic and the interest. Like, that's the only way you can add events to a looper show is to just keep stacking.
So what do you have samples of the stems then in your sampler?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's a sampler and a sequencer.
Okay,
cool. You can have 16 samples per song, 16 different sounds. Each sound can be up to 64 seconds, depending on which sampler. I'm actually using two samplers. The second sampler has no limits. You can have as many everything as you want. It's basically a computer in the form of a drum machine. And I use that for like background vocals and stuff that's long. The other sampler is like kind of limited, but way easier to use live because I can't use my hands at all. Like everything has to be done with my feet.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as I take my hands off the guitar, who knows what's going to happen.
So what's the benefit of doing that as opposed to just coming on there with your tracks?
Oh, the benefit is that tracks are set.
You come see a show,
and I play the song for you, and then you come to a show a week later, and I play that song for you. It's the same track.
It's the same track.
Yeah.
This one's different.
This is a sampler and a sequencer. So what happens is each song has the ability to have 16 different patterns, and so pattern number one is the introduction, pattern number two is the verse, pattern number three is the chorus, pattern number four is the bridge,
you have to get in and out of those patterns.
I have
in real time while you're playing.
I have each pattern hooked to a MIDI board.
Okay.
And the MIDI board has six pedals, but different banks. So bank one is patterns 1 through 6, bank two is patterns 6, 7 through 12, and bank three.
I'm just trying to picture myself in that situation and just like
16
hitting one for a different song or something.
Oh no, each song is selected. So each song
okay
is on
yeah
a scene.
So you can't do that.
Yeah,
okay.
You can't do that, but you can hit the wrong pattern.
Okay,
you can mean to go to the chorus and go to the bridge.
From episode 790, that's my good pal, Jackie Venson. She's been on the show a lot of times. I know that conversation got a little techie there towards the end, but let me tell you something. First of all, it's astounding, and it makes a lot of sense. It takes 30 hours a week of practice of some sort to be Jackie Venson, all right? So she clarified that. Secondly, I thought that leaving in that tech talk was pretty good because if you've ever seen Jackie Venson,
she's usually dancing around, having a great time, playing and in the moment and in the song and in the whole thing. You don't realize she's doing all this other shit. So kudos to Jackie Benson, amazing artist. Get out and check out her album, Joy, which just dropped. It's amazing. It's great. It's a fantastic record. Go out there and check it out. Jackie Benson, amazing artist. See if she's coming to a town near you. Go to JackieBenson.com. Another great guitar player that was on over the last 100 episodes is my pal, Eric Tesmer. Eric, actually, before we get into this Eric Tesmer stuff, Eric asked me last year when I was like, hey, I'm releasing my record in September. He was like, hey, can I interview for your podcast? And he interviewed me for my podcast. But I also interviewed him when he dropped his single, Good So Bad. Back in December, we had this talk on episode 760. It's absolutely fantastic. He talks about kind of the story and the inspiration behind the song Good So Bad and kind of where he was at when he was writing that song. It's pretty heavy, but it's pretty fucking great. So Eric's been on the show a few times. We always have great conversations on here. He's a deep thinker. He's a heavy dude. I mean, he's light. He's fun to talk to, and he's an amazing artist, but he is a deep thinker. And when you're a deep thinker, there's some heaviness that comes along with you. And this conversation is great about this song. So enjoy me and Eric Tesmer from episode 760 talking about his song, Good So Bad.
But there was a time then where it kind of shifted for me in my mind. It's like, I have to write my own song about this, about my own experience. It's not just enough for me to sing somebody else's words about something that's so heavy. And the thing is, I feel like I talk to you about sobriety as much as I ever talk to anybody about it.
Right.
Just because it's like, it's not something that I preach a lot.
Right.
Because it's, everyone's on their own clock, their own journey, whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
You know? And I'm not like saying that you shouldn't go out and drink a beer if you wanted to, or, you know, get drunk if you want to. But I just know that for me, it's like, it's just not a good idea anymore.
Right.
That combined with, I have a really close friend who, her daughter, before she was 20, was hooked on heroin, which is, you know, more commonplace than it ever should be now. And it was like, you know, she's been through rehab. I mean, she's doing great now, which is awesome. But like, for years, constantly through this cycle, terrible. And I remember that one day, my friend calling me and being like, you know, she said that she's just going to try to overdose and just, you know, stop being a problem for everybody. And I was like, it was like one of those moments. And like, this friend of mine and I have been through the hardest parts of our adult lives together, you know, just, and her daughter is like, man, it was, I can't even use my words to express the gravity of it, you know? So I took like all my experiences of being just like, just, you know, I always think of Diane Lane and Barfly. When they
Faye Dunaway,
what's that? Faye Dunaway. Yeah. That's right. I don't know why. I think it's, I always get those names mixed up. My bad. Faye Dunaway.
Okay.
Edit that out. No, let no one know. Faye Dunaway.
That's a hard fucking movie.
Yeah, and like, you know, the thing is, I saw that movie like I probably like a month before I got sober.
I read that in your bio,
and it was like, there's a point in the movie, and like I grew up on a farm, so it's like, I saw it happening, and I was like, this isn't going to end well, where they go and they grab corn out of the cornfield, but it's just field corn. It's not sweet corn. Mm-hmm. So they take it back to their apartment, you know, and they're all wasted, and they try to cook up this corn, and it's, you know, terrible.
Yeah.
And she's like, why does nothing ever work out? I was like, my God, like, I know that feeling. Why does nothing ever work out? It's like, what do I have in common with these people? You know, like, yeah. Couldn't even put it together at that point. But like, there's like that just absolute frustration and like, just like despondent, like, what is it? Despair. I don't know.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like, just completely empty. And then, you know, just, you're trying to solve the problem by piling more of the problem on
it.
You know? And so I took most of my own experiences, and then just like this amazingly potent situation where a young girl whose life had never really even started, you know, who was like, everyone was trying to make her get back to being normal when she didn't even know what normal was anymore, you know? And I'm just like, it took me a long time to write the song. And actually the music to that song, I had started several years ago. I was like, I'm really happy with where this is going musically, because it really seems to like have like, it could be an emotional powerhouse sort of thing, you know, like I really feel like I could convey something heavy.
Yeah, and convey something heavy he did with his song Good So Bad. You'll hear that actually on episode 799, which comes out this Friday. Great song. You can go listen to it now. From episode 760, me talking to my pal Eric Tesmer, who's been working on a project with Nancy Wilson from Heart. From what I understand, it's called Wilson Tesmer. That's what I understand. I don't know all the details. We need to get him back in here. Maybe we can get the Nancy in here. Let's talk to him about that. Let's see if we can get that going. They actually invited me to a party that they had, but I already had plans to go see a show with another friend. So I didn't make it. I didn't get to meet Nancy Wilson, but some of my bandmates did. So let's get Eric Tesmer back in here, find out what's going on with that Wilson Tesmer record. I know Heart's on tour this summer, but I know Eric and Nancy have been working in the studio. Eric Tesmer, man, great artist, and always a great conversation. Go back to listen to episode 760. It's great. All right, gang, let's go up to episode 745, which I did live at Austin City Limits Music Festival. This is actually from my birthday, October 14th, 2018. I went out. I was invited by Austin City Limits Music Festival and the Austin Music Foundation to sit down and do some live conversations with people on the premises. Now, it was a little bit loud. You'll hear it. It's a little loud and kind of sounds like I'm screaming at my guest, who is the amazingly talented rapper and hip-hop artist, Mr. Kid Jones. He's been on the show before a couple of times. His brother Tank Washington's been on the show. I love his whole group of people, his LNS crew. Anyway, we got together out there on a sunny stage in a very loud Austin City Limits Music Festival, presented by Austin City Limits Music Festival and the Austin Music Foundation. I sat down and talked to the great Kid Jones about the Austin music hip-hop scene. What's going on there, huh? What's going on with the hip-hop scene here in Austin? Find out from my pal Kid Jones, live at Austin City Limits Music Festival on my 50th birthday. Let's get down. How does one get to Austin City Limits Festival?
One gets there by working extremely hard.
Yeah?
Yeah, just putting your foot down on the pedal and just, you know, all gas, no brakes, don't look back.
That's all you can really do.
That's it.
You have a new album out called Homecoming, came out earlier this year.
Yes, sir.
And you got a couple new singles out as well?
Yep, I got a couple singles. One called Dripped Up / Brand New. I just dropped on YouTube. The music video is out right now. You can check that out.
Fantastic. People can get out there and see it. Actually, yeah, that's a great video, by the way.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
appreciate
man. Yeah. So did you record that here in Austin?
I did record both of those tracks in Austin in my living room.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, it was
awesome. And you're still part of the LNS crew.
Definitely.
How many guys are in the crew?
Right now it's about five of us. Me, Tank, Harris, Corey, and DJ Charlie.
Okay. All right. I know Tank and Harris and you, but I don't know the other guys yet. I gotta meet them.
Yeah, Corey Kendricks, he moved to Denver not too long ago.
All right.
But he's still part of the crew.
Were there some guys, am I not mistaken? You were on the show a couple years ago and man, this is so loud. you were on the show a couple years ago. Wasn't there one of the guys that lived in Atlanta or something? Am I wrong?
I ended up moving to Atlanta.
You did?
Yeah, I moved Atlanta for a while. Yeah, I was
How long were you there?
I was there for about a year and a half. Yeah, almost
what
2 years.
Were you performing and stuff there?
Yeah, I did some shows there. Yeah?
Yeah. So what brought you back to Austin?
Just really, I was in a house fire, so That was like the initial thing that brought me back.
What do you mean? Like you were in the house when it caught on fire?
Yeah.
With your family?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Did you have to get out while the place was on fire?
Yeah.
Holy jeez.
Yeah, our neighbors set their house on fire, and ours caught, you know, backlash off that.
They set theirs on fire?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Things happen. It's crazy.
Yeah, things do happen. So then you came back to Austin. I was going to ask you this. There's way more, like, Austin is known as the live music capital of the world, right?
True.
And in the rest of the world, hip-hop is basically the number one style of music. Everybody gets it. Everybody does it. But in Austin, for some reason, it's the live music capital of the world, but hip-hop is somehow a little fractured. Am I wrong about that?
100% correct, yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's gotten better over time? Do you think there's people that are making it better?
Yeah, I think it's definitely getting better because, you know, like, for instance, like, 10 years ago, there probably wasn't a hip-hop artist from Austin performing here. So
that's true.
You know, the progression is getting there in the city. You know, the events and the things that are going on in the city is getting a lot better. So, I mean, it's progressing. We would like to see it, you know, move a lot faster and actually get some like, big companies to come here and start, you know, looking and searching out talent here. But, yeah, it's progressing. It's good.
From episode 745, live at Austin City Limits Music Festival, I was talking to Kid Jones. Yeah, go back there and check it out, man. He's a great artist. You should check out his music. It's absolutely fantastic. He's a great rapper. All of his beats are just fucking badass. And you should check out the rest of the LNS crew, Tank Washington, all those cats that he mentioned. Great people. All right, man, we're going to do the last combo here. All right, and this is with my pals Eric Bojorquez and Nico Sanchez from the band Superfónicos, who I had the pleasure of getting to work with in the Austin Music Foundation Artist Development Program this year. And they also released a brilliant new EP. It's called Suelta. They dropped it back in October. These guys are absolutely fantastic. Their music's great. They're very, very cool dudes. And we were having a conversation about what they're trying to do by spreading this music to everyone. And it's basically like a lesson. I mean, kind of a lesson, still entertaining, but these guys are bringing this music to everyone and they're teaching everyone about it. And this is what they're talking about here. So enjoy me and Nico and Eric from the great band Superfónicos, episode 737, chatting it up here. Let's get down. Does that go well? I mean, it could be great.
It's very easy.
I think it's worked out really good for us because the foundation is in a lot of these Afro-Colombian rhythms, not just cumbia. There's all these other great rhythms that are relatively unknown here in the States. There's merengue, which is totally different than like the Dominican merengue, poro. There's all kinds of different sounds that are like, well, cool, let's use that as like the backbone of this song. And then, you know, you can really do whatever on top of it and take it to a different place. But, you know, we're like trying to show a different flavor of what Colombia has to
offer. That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, it's cool to take something that's existing and sort of give it a new life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's great.
And to another degree, we really want to kind of like change people's misconceptions about what Colombia is and who Colombian people are and what they're into and what they do, you know?
Yeah.
Like we mentioned growing up, getting a lot of like, you know,
sure.
Oh, is your uncle a drug dealer? Right, kind of stuff. And we're like, if you're focusing just on the like narcos, and the whole like Pablo Escobar thing, you know, you're missing a whole lot of what Colombia has to offer.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's a big part of what we're trying to do is show the United States that that's not what Colombia is.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
It's totally different. It's a beautiful place and beautiful people and positive. They have such a positive spirit about them and just overcoming so many struggles and just they live in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, because of, I think, how hard it's been.
Well, also, I think what happens, too, in the Latin American countries that have had political unrest like that, the infrastructure is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, just from roads getting taken care of to healthcare to, like,
groceries. I mean, you guys are in a completely different situation than like Venezuela is, but like, you know, people are running out of that, literally running on their feet out of that to get the fuck out of there.
They're going into Colombia right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw a whole thing on Vice about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very intense and very, it's tough because those are, I mean, they're all our people. You know what I mean? I mean, I might be Cuban, you guys might be Colombian, but we're all together this thing.
We're all one.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's sad to see that go down. But it you know, people's misconceptions, I mean, you know, that's going to happen. But anyway, aside from that, you guys, do you guys tour?
We have yet to embark on a large tour. Yeah, it is a lot of dudes. A lot of us have families.
Yeah.
So it's a little difficult right now, but the plan for 2019 is to get some touring.
Yeah.
Next summer, we're planning one.
Eric and Nico. From one of my favorite bands, Superfónicos, I was really glad to get to work with them in the Austin Music Foundation Artist Development Program. Hopefully that tour that they were talking about on there is really going down. You can go back and listen to that whole episode. It's episode 737. There we are talking about Colombian music and Colombian culture and misconceptions of Colombian culture and Latin American culture in general. Look at me going all NPR. I want to thank those guys for coming. I want to thank all the artists that have been on for the last 98 episodes. Thank you guys for coming. All of them, actually, the last 798 episodes. This has been a great fortune of mine to get to do this. It's fantastic. I want to thank all my partners, all of the sponsors. I want to thank Austin Music Foundation for opening up these great opportunities for me, like getting to do the On the Record, where I interviewed Kathy Valentine and Lewis Black and Frenchie Smith on episode 770, getting to go out to Austin City Limits Music Festival, talking to Jackie Venson and to Kid Jones, episode 745. That was a great way to spend my 50th birthday. I want to thank all of the sponsors for the show. You guys are all great. I want to thank all of you that listen to the show. Come on out to episode 800 and hang out with us. Come celebrate with us. We'll take some questions. We'll do it all. AC Monaro, Ray Prim, Lori Gallardo, and of course, the great Alicia Lani. 5 to 7 p.m., Cosmic Coffee and Beer, great place to go. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook. Thank you guys for listening. You guys are always great. Fantastic people. I hope you enjoyed this show, and I hope you enjoy episode 799 coming on Friday, the music from How Did I Get Here. Thanks again for listening. Means the world to me, and let's get down.